I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, and this is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. This summer, a school district in El Paso, Texas, is constructing a new multi-million-dollar bus hub. The project will move forward despite months of opposition from residents of the Chamizal neighborhood, a low-income area located on the southern end of El Paso. It's right across the Rio Grande from Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. Chamizal is a neighborhood that's home to about 6,000 people, and residents worry the hub will cause more air pollution in an area that's already wedged between the heavy traffic on an international bridge and the factory zones of Juarez. Fronteras reporter Natalie Krebs has more.
On a recent morning, Hilda Villegas takes me on a drive around the Chamizal neighborhood. She's giving me what she calls the toxic tour.
We have the warehouses to our left. And then we have I-10, and then we have the railroad tracks, as you can see, that they go around our community.
Villegas is a lifelong resident of the neighborhood. She's also the founder of Familias Unidas del Chamizal, a neighborhood activist organization. She's showing me some of the environmental issues in her area. She points to a recycling facility located next to an elementary school. It is scrap metal piled high above its fence.
I think it surpasses the height that they're allowed to have their debris.
Large trucks fill the residential streets. Many are headed to go over the Bridge of the Americas to Mexico. Villegas says they regularly idle in long lines.
The traffic starts piling up from, even from the middle of Cotton, all the way up to the bridge. So this is where they idle, the trucks idle.
Not far from the bridge is Bowie High School, which has over 1,400 students. Behind the school, next to its football field, is where El Paso Independent School District is building its new bus hub. The $11.6 million structure will house an operations hub, a maintenance facility, and 124 buses. EPISD spokesperson Melissa Martinez says it chose this spot because it's in the center of the district.
We could house not only the bus hub there, but also now we'll have some maintenance facilities there as well, and still not disrupt the structure of the campus. You know, we still can maintain the integrity of the school.
When making the decision, Martinez says the district considered the environmental issues in the Chamizal neighborhood. It looked at the hub's impact on air quality and traffic.
We have a board that's very socially conscious, as well as administration. If we truly believed it was going to be detrimental to that area, it would not be there. You know, obviously, we are here first and foremost to serve students.
But Familias Unidas has been fighting the hub every step of the way. The group has organized protests, spoken at school board meetings, and contacted community leaders to try to prevent its construction. Vega says the kids and the neighborhood have enough health hazards without this bus hub.
As a community, I feel that we have to be able to make that push. It is environment. It is discrimination, you know. It is tied to the violation of our rights.
In early April, Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid sent a civil rights complaint to four federal agencies on behalf of the group. It alleges the hub is environmental discrimination. It's being installed in a neighborhood that has a higher proportion of Hispanic and foreign-born residents than the rest of El Paso. And its residents don't want more pollutants.
They were already fighting to reduce the existing negative impacts. And so to them, this was really a slap in the face. We're just going to add more. We're going to dump more into your community.
Aaron Gaines is a lawyer with the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. The district says it has made adjustments to address the issues brought up by Familias Unidas. These include things like adding a landscape buffer and using propane-fueled buses to reduce emissions. But Gaines says this isn't enough.
Yeah, it doesn't address the overall issue, which is you're bringing in not only just more traffic, but you're bringing in a maintenance facility. All the cars of people who will be working there and parking there, the buses going in and out. So you're just adding more congestion overall to that area.
Familias Unidas members say they filed the complaint because the district hasn't been responsive to its concerns. EPISD spokeswoman Martinez says the district has worked hard to reach the community. She says it's had nearly a dozen meetings with Chamizal residents.
I mean, whatever times that they said would be most convenient for their audiences, you know, for their members, we accommodated. And quite frankly, you know, they're not very well attended.
Part of this issue could be because spreading the word to residents isn't always easy. Many don't speak English. In fact, some don't even live there.
There's certain people nowadays that are not from that area. They just rent in that area, but most of them come from Juarez. They just use the renting area to come in and out.
That's Familias Unidas member and Bowie alumna, Solia Fierro. She says families in Mexico will rent a piece of land in the neighborhood so they can send their kids to school in El Paso. Fierro says that's one of the reasons it's sometimes difficult to communicate with parents on issues like the bus hub.
So a lot of the parents, you go knocking on doors, you're not going to find them there when you need them because they're across the border. But they only need this residence address to prove that they have a place to go to school.
The other reason is economic, says Beatriz Valladolid. She grew up in the Chamizal neighborhood and also graduated from Bowie.
A lot of people in this area feel like, well, what can we do? How can we really fight people? We don't have money. We don't have major resources. We don't have anything to threaten them with. So what's the point?
Bowie High School is famous in El Paso. It has a lot of history, particularly with discrimination. It was originally built as a segregated school for Hispanics and African Americans. This lasted until the 1950s. Here's Hilda Villegas again.
There was a lot of discrimination. So there was also a time of the 1960s, 1970s when children would get punished for speaking Spanish, you know.
Recently, Bowie was at the heart of a district-wide cheating scandal that broke out in 2010. Administrators were barring some low-performing students from state testing so the school would meet state standards. Many students affected were Spanish-speaking immigrants. According to the Texas Education Agency, half the students at Bowie have a limited English proficiency. Viega says the scandal was a reminder of when kids were prohibited from speaking Spanish.
We saw that scandal was very much tied to children. They were having a difficult time speaking English. They were pushed out, they were punished, and they had no other choice but to drop out.
EPISD spokesperson Martinez says the district knows it has a long road ahead to rebuild trust with the school and the community following the scandal.
And it's something we work on every day in the district. It's a history that we have. It's one that we inherited, you know, this current board and administration. Nonetheless, we are charged with addressing it and making sure that it never happens again.
However, Martina says she doesn't feel the bus hub is reflective of this trust issue.
The bus hub issue has been brought up by one group that I don't necessarily believe speaks for all of the students or families.
As we finish our tour, Viega says this fight is actually about more than a bus hub. It's about saving her neighborhood. She says she fears all the industry will continue to push people out.
Families really depend on Chamizal. It's more affordable, and the schools are close by. The hospitals close by. Their families are close by because of Juarez. It does have potential to be a livable community.
Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid is still waiting on a reply from the federal government to see if it will accept its complaint. In the meantime, construction on the hub will begin this summer. In El Paso, I'm Natalie Krebs.
Coming up, 125 years ago, a religious order of sisters in San Antonio looked beyond ethnicity and race, reaching out to those most in need in the community.
They were all over the South. They were actually the pioneers in Catholic education for African Americans. They went all through the South, Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas.
That's still to come on Fronteras. Stay with us. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. In Dallas, students from a failing middle school are going to have to find a new place to learn. That school is closing. Next year, many of those students will be attending a nearby high school that also has a history of struggle. But as KERA's Bill Zeebel reports, it's managed to turn itself around.
Just before Pinkston High School principal Dwayne Simmons arrived here in 2014, he walked the hallway incognito. The school hadn't met state standards for 3 years running.
It was just this culture of low expectations, and that's from instructional and even just to the climate itself.
If Pinkston hadn't gotten off the state's improvement required list, it would be struggling with what seven other schools across North Texas face. The state could close the school or just take over the district.
Some of the things that I saw were shocking. You had outdated equipment. You had old school chalkboards. We were worksheet rich. There were kids in the hallways. The instruction, was very poor quality. How could you blame kids for not wanting to go to class because they were bored?
For years, Pinkston High School in the heart of West Dallas flirted with closure by the Texas Education Agency. In 7 of the last 11 years, it earned the state's worst possible rating. As Simmons mapped out a new plan for a better Pinkston, the school remained burdened by its past. Just ask 8th grader Alexis Razzo. She goes to Edison now and refuses to go to Pinkston next year.
My dad doesn't have a too good opinion on Pinkston, so he said, yeah, Pinkston is off limits. My uncle went there, and my uncle, he says that he got in a lot of fights and it just wasn't good.
That was a decade ago. History teacher David McDaniel says things are better now, but it took work. He arrived a year ahead of Principal Simmons after teaching in Lubbock.
I was at a pretty wealthy school out there, and, you know, anybody can teach out there. It's pretty easy. Those kids are going to show up on time. They're going to do their homework without asking. And it's not really a challenge, and so it's kind of boring. When I got here, I had to be much more creative.
Here, 92% of Pinkston's kids come from low-income families. Many live in public housing, others in apartments, or old wood-frame homes with chickens in the yard. The school sits in one of the poorest neighborhoods in Dallas. Per capita income is just $12,000, according to the census. Nearly three-quarters of Pinkston kids are Hispanic, a quarter African-American. When McDaniel got here, not even half the student body could pass math or English.
I had to change the way I taught, and I had to teach reading and writing in my history class when I started. I didn't really know what I was getting into. Nobody really prepared me for that. But once I got here, a lot of the staff that I grew close with, right, and developed relationships with, we worked together and found ways to do that.
Principal Simmons added discipline and new technology. He asked teachers to stop lecturing so much and have kids talk more. And what happened? Test scores rose, says Kenrick Narcisse. The attorney took over Pinkston's law magnet 6 years ago.
At one time, students was there sitting and getting it. And this time, students would sit down. They like to ask questions. They push the teacher. They want to know more and more. And at the same time, it caused the teachers to push the students to get more and more. Well, it's not a teaching-driven class. It's a student-led class.
My first year of school, I noticed that most of the teachers were more like, hey, I don't really care what you do as long as you're just quiet and sitting down.
18-year-old Ana Alvarado is a senior in the student leadership class that Narcisse teaches.
But later on, I noticed more teachers were hired. They introduced new ways to do things. They make it sort of simple and challenging at the same time. And I believe when they give you a challenge, the student wants to do it.
Anna's challenge? Even though she's in the law magnet, she wants to be an engineer and the first in her family to go to college. Back when she was a freshman, the challenge for Pinkston? Improving test scores. Since the arrival of Principal Simmons, the school has met state standards.
We embrace the failure is not an option model. And so if we focus on good quality instruction, providing a safe and civil learning environment, then the scores will take care of themselves. Again, it's not about scores, scores, scores. We try to improve the learning experience for each student.
That's the experience Gilbert Hernandez is looking for. He's now an 8th grader at Edison.
I applied for the collegiate side of Pinkston, so I don't mind going there.
The 14-year-old likes the choices offered at Pinkston, like the Collegiate Academy starting its second year. Every student picks a pathway as a freshman.
They have business, they have health, and they have technology, but I'm going to go for business. That'll get me on track, and when I get to college, I already have 2 years ready.
And this campus, too, is ready for big change. When Edison shuts down, those 7th and 8th graders move to a school within a school inside Pinkston.
This will actually be the first floor wing.
Simmons stands in the back part of Pinkston where Edison kids will go.
They will build glass doors here to help keep this area isolated. This will be the first floor wing, and then above us will be the second floor wing.
And before these kids even finish high school, construction on a brand new Pinkston will start just down the street. And the old Pinkston? Current plans will make it the new middle school. For Fronteras, I'm Bill Zeeble.
In 1888, a widowed Texas transplant by way of Ireland, Margaret Mary Healy Murphy, opened the first Catholic African-American school and church in San Antonio, St. Peter Claver Church. Murphy also took it upon herself to establish a religious order of sisters in San Antonio that became the first in Texas, founded expressly for the purpose of ministering to the poor and people of color. 125 years later, the Sisters of the Holy Spirit and Mary Immaculate are still carrying out their mission in the Lone Star State, most of the American South, Mexico, and even Zambia. Cecilia Gutierrez Venable is an archivist and historian for the Sisters of the Holy Spirit and Mary Immaculate. She and the sisters have accumulated 125 years of photos and history in the book Images of America, The Sisters of the Holy Spirit and Mary Immaculate. Venable tells Fronteras of the struggles that Margaret Mary faced in finding teachers for her new school.
When she first started the school, she attracted a lot of young women. Well, the thing with young women is that when they marry, they are forced to leave teaching. And she did approach several communities in the San Antonio area, but at that time there was few people in these communities, and they were so overwhelmed with the work they already had, they weren't able to send her any sisters to help. And her younger sister, this sister belonged to the Sisters of St. Mary Nemours, and so she had gone to her sister in Waco, and her sister suggested that she start her own congregation of nuns. And so, you know,
was it possible to do that with her not being an actual sister?
Well, she went to study with the Sisters of St. Mary Nemours, and after a year, I believe, studying with them, she was able to start her own congregation. And it seemed natural for her to go back to Ireland. She still had many relatives. And also she was related to Daniel O'Connell. And Daniel O'Connell is the first Irish to sit on the English Parliament. And he was also the first really to voice abolition of the English slavery in the Caribbean. You know, I mean, she had those roots, and so it was natural for her to go. And she went four different times to Ireland to recruit. What made young women want to join this order was it was a new order. They were really the pioneers of creating this organization that would minister to people of color.
Was it necessary for the students at the school to be Catholic?
Absolutely not. She opened the school. It was tuition-free. Education there was really significant for people of color because the sisters taught them art and music, which, you know, in some places they would not be able to have that kind of an education. So.
And this was at a time when there was very intense segregation already in schools.
Yes.
And it was an education that was also being offered not just to a segregated community, but to a population that was essentially denied education outright.
Exactly. I have newspaper articles from San Antonio and other places in Texas, strong belief by some that, you know, people of color didn't really want an education. But Margaret was a very progressive woman of her time, and so she realized the only way for social uplift is through education.
So remind us again what year this order was established.
She started the order in 1893. She built the school and church in 1888.
And it has expanded not just across South Texas, but into Mexico and into other countries as well?
Yes, they were all over the South. They were actually the pioneers in Catholic education for African Americans. They went all through the South, Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, and taught at a lot of the first Catholic schools that were opening up for African Americans.
So you have this beautiful compilation of photos in this book called Images of America, The Sisters of the Holy Spirit and Mary Immaculate. So explain how you were able to access all the photos and all the information, the history of this particular order.
Well, the book wasn't just written by me. Like I said, it is written by the sisters, too, and they were just phenomenal in helping me find information. But as I said, I'm the archivist there, so I'm privy to some documents. And as far as the photos, it was wonderful because, yes, the early photos we have in, you know, the archives. But, you know, as time went on, it was, and the sisters learned that I was doing this, it's like, oh, I have these pictures. There's some pictures in there that none of the other sisters, you know, saw because it was their personal photos. You know, their work is important. Their ministry is important. They don't feel like they should, you know, ring their own bells or call attention to themselves. But by having, you know, some of these pictures, it's like it details the great work that they were able to do. And also, we got a lot of new pictures for the archives.
There's this one great photo that I saw in the book that just really stood out to me. Are the sisters playing basketball? They've got their habits pinned
back.
Is it baseball? That's right. I knew it was some sport. The skirts are hiked up a little bit so they could play.
So, yeah, they would have baseball teams. They close pin their veils and their skirts up so that they can run. And it's a wonderful community of women who have, you know, the strict purpose of their ministry, but they do have fun.
We've been speaking with Cecilia Gutierrez Venable, archivist and historian for the Sisters of the Holy Spirit and Mary Immaculate. She and the sisters have compiled 125 years of photos and history in the book Images of America, the Sisters of the Holy Spirit and Mary Immaculate. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Norma Martinez produced the broadcast. Our executive producers are Steve Short and Fernando Ortiz. Our digital editor is Vince Kong. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.